Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Flip the Focus. We're here again to amplify female voices in tech. I'm Jen Dobby, and I'm the creative director at Hotwire Australia. I'm also a tech sticky beak and a teller of female-led stories. I am so delighted that today on Flip the Focus, we have the absolute tech legend, Ida Tin, with me. Hey, Ida, how are you?
Very fine. Thank you so much for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure. I'm so excited that you could make time to talk to us. Ida's kind of a big deal in the tech world. She invented the female reproductive app Clue. She co-founded it in 2013. The deal with Clue is that it combines science and tech to give people essential and evidence-based education about health, periods, and sex. It has over 10 million monthly active users in 190 countries. It has raised an extraordinary amount of money. I'm going to say around $70 million in funding to date. And it's really a huge tech success story. Not content with changing the face of reproduction, she also created a whole new industry to operate within, and she named it femtech. So she's not a big deal at all. Let's get into it and flip the focus with Ida Tin. So Ida, let's talk about the foundations of Clue.
When I realized that there had been so little innovation into family planning method since the pill came out in the late 50s, I was kind of shocked, angry, and puzzled, like, how, what, why? You know, we had invented so many amazing and planet-altering things since then. We'd put people on the moon and everything, and yet a woman doesn't know which day she can actually become pregnant. I thought, somebody must be working on this. All the big diagnostic companies, you know, this was the time of quantified self. Everybody wanted to have, like, data on the body and optimized living, and I thought, what if we could measure hormones and know exactly which day we can become pregnant? Then we could know which days to use a condom, and all the rest of the time we didn't have to worry. I thought, that's a really simple, great idea. Somebody must be working on this. You know, all the big labs must be working on this. But they weren't, it turned out. I'm still puzzled. I'm still kind of upset that this gets so little of the world's attention, because I think it's fair to say that figuring out when to have children is a really essential kind of problem to solve for the planet, not just for women, but really for everybody.
Exactly. And I think sadly it's the case with a lot of female tech advancements, isn't it? It affects more than 50% of the population. Of course, somebody had already thought of it, but no, they hadn't. So we've talked about the founding vision behind Clue. And I think what you spoke to that I found so interesting was, you know, this kind of complete bewilderment that nobody else had done this before. And I wondered, in terms of your early challenges within Clue, did you find that the fact nobody else was thinking about it placed more challenges in the face of legitimizing Clue and getting investors or media to take you seriously?
There were definitely different things that made it difficult to be, I wouldn't even say be taken seriously, more maybe being understood. So the question of menstrual health and periods being a thing that you could track and kind of collect interesting data about and really help people, that was, I think, not so well understood yet. And then we wanted to build a piece of hardware as well. So people, I think, were confused. Are you a hardware company? Are you a software company? You know, are you going to speak to our life science team? Are you going to speak to our tech team? Mm. Now it's much more understood that, of course, that's a mix. You would never think of having, you know, a piece of home diagnostics without a digital sort of interface with it. So, but back then that was still very confusing. It was actually one of the main reasons why we stopped building the hardware, because we weren't getting anywhere in fundraising because we landed between chairs. And then the cultural aspect of, you know, the life experience that women have living in a female body, I think culturally has just been and still is to a large extent very invisible in culture. Mm. You know, what it feels like to be a woman is very invisible. So when you sat across male investors, there was this whole kind of educational piece of trying to explain, like, no, it does matter that you know when your next period is going to come, or it does matter if suddenly it's not coming, or it's super irregular, or I'm bleeding too much. Like, so there were many layers where we were talking into kind of a little bit of a vacuum.
Yeah, it makes absolute sense. And I think we're still in a situation now where, you know, people get the ick, particularly men, if you actually talk about menstruation at all. So it's one of those things that my girlfriends and I often laugh about. If the men in the room actually knew physically what we were going through on a day-to-day basis before we walked into the room when it comes to our menstrual cycle, they'd be surprised, but also they'd be really supportive, because nobody wants other people to be going through any of the things that those of us who menstruate really take for granted with the experience of having periods.
Absolutely. And you know, I think it's a little bit on women to actually build that bridge over and invite the men in to help them understand what it is to live with our biology. And in my mind, the first step is that we ourselves are educated, that we know what's going on, that we understand what's happening in our bodies, that we have done our own sort of, I don't know, inner work, so that we are not icked out by it and we can talk about it, and that we don't hide it and say we have a headache when in fact we have period pains or something else. And my experience is that, I mean, I'm sure there are men that are icked out, but actually my experience have been that many men are very curious. Would you say they do want to be supportive, and they sometimes also have a story, you know, they will say, yeah, me and my partner, we went through fertility treatment. It was really tough. Men feel that these stories are out there, but for many, it's a black box. They don't know. So I think we have to help them come be part of our experience.
Yeah, and I love that sense of education. For me, what's been really great with Clue is when it came the right time to have a conversation with my daughter about menstruation, I was able to show her my app and just show her, you know, this is some of the things that are normal in my life, and these are some of the things you might experience, and, you know, go through each of the icons with her and kind of use them as talking points. So I think that for so many of us, Clue has such a place in our lives for helping us educate other people. It's a really extraordinary tool in that way.
You know what, one of the things I love about Clue is that we are collecting this very unique and powerful data set. And when people enter a data point into the app, they say, today I had a headache, or today I've started bleeding. I have this sort of very physical experience of we are together really moving female health research forward. You know, we are actually building this repository of knowledge that can help the world learn about the woman's body, women's bodies. So, because it's not just as individuals that we need to be educated, it's actually also the science community and the world and our doctors. And this is a big collective effort that really has actually done these things. It's one of the, I think, beautiful sort of gifts that Clue has gotten, is that we got to work with all these science collaborators, really fantastic research institutions, to do some of this work. Because imagine researchers that wrote the textbooks that are down in the library about female health, you know, they had so small samples. They could collect data from so few people, and often it would be white people who studied at a college in America. And now we just have this extraordinary broad data set, which of course the world needs for obvious reasons. So that excites me. It has been very encouraging to see how many of our users feel that it's meaningful and helpful to be willing to share their anonymized data with science in that way.
Yeah, I think it's quite extraordinary. Another one of the issues in Australia, which Clue has been very timely around, is the conversation around perimenopause. And in fact, one of our listener questions was around that data. So that's really nicely timed. Our listener Lucy was asking, from the data that you have to date in terms of perimenopause and menopause on Clue, Are you starting to see any trends around age or, you know, anything that's starting to already challenge norms or scientific thoughts?
We ask our users, have you been diagnosed with the medical conditions in this range? Or have you been not diagnosed? Have you gone to a doctor and they said, no, you don't have this? And then we could compare what people said to what we could see in the data. And what we found was that there was, excuse me, a big diagnostic or diagnosing gap. There were many more people that seemed to have something going on that a health provider had not diagnosed. And one of the things we saw that was that people are suffering a lot from mental, people are really suffering from a lot of mental challenges. And we can see that people who are menopausal often get misdiagnosed as having anxiety or depression, when possibly these are signs of going through menopause. And I'm sure we're going to do a lot more research, and there will be papers where this is sort of scientifically valid. So this is, you must take this as my sort of initial impressions more than a scientific truth. But there seems to be something going on in the healthcare system where when people come and they go through menopause, they're not being recognized. Like what's going on for them is not being recognized as hormonal stuff. So in my mind, the whole hormonal space is super exciting and really ripe for an innovation jump, so that we can start having data on like what's actually going on with my hormones in real time and over time. I think that might clarify some of these experiences people have around menopause.
I think it's extraordinary. And, you know, again, coming back to that basic tenet of clue, that it's really evidence-based and scientifically backed. And that's really what makes it so powerful, isn't it? I know for a lot of, my girlfriends and within our listener group here on Flip the Focus, that the feedback has been when they're with their doctor, you know, they will literally get it out and say, look, these are the things that are happening, you know, and show the data and let that help them towards seeing a specialist or having a diagnosis. We're now in a position where we're really able to, I guess, empower ourselves, but also be much more useful to our GPs so that they can start to see patterns that they might have not seen before.
Yeah, what you're touching on there is really important, this ability to go and advocate for yourself based on data. Women are not kind of heard or seen or taken seriously. And then when they are able to display the data, the healthcare providers be like, oh, okay, you really are bleeding a lot or something like this. So it's never, you know, a digital app or the doctor. Is how do we enable both patients and healthcare providers to form better care?
I think oftentimes for GPs, when they hear, you know, I looked online, or, you know, they worry that they're about to hear a, you know, www.yourealldefinitelygoinadie.com, which must be so frustrating for them. Whereas in fact, you know, something like Clue just makes life so much easier. I think that leads us really nicely into the broader conversation around the origins of femtech. I'd love to just go back and talk a little about that origin story and hear from you around some thoughts on why the term was initially so specifically referring to tech focusing just on women's health.
I started noticing that there were a small group, but there were a group of entrepreneurs, startups that were building things for female health, and they felt like neighboring companies. And I was trying to see, how do we describe what we do? And we found it difficult at Clue, because a period tracker, yes, we were a period tracker, but we were more. We were also other things. And I wanted all these bits to be understood as one thing that was happening in culture, one sort of new thing that was emerging in the tech world. Because my experience had been that when you go and pitch to investors, you know, they could kind of question a period's niche, which is absurd, but they did. Or, you know, it's pelvic floor health, like a niche thing. And I was like, well, if you put all these things together, it's a big thing. It's a really big thing.
No one can call it a niche anymore. Okay.
I hope not. but also for myself and my fellow entrepreneurs, like I felt like we needed to be like supporting each other in that way of being part of a thing. And then it was also this very practical sense that if an investor could stand up on his most likely his Monday morning partner meeting and pitch a company that he wanted to invest in, and he didn't have to say, you know, there is this menstrual app company, but he could say, I'm looking at a femtech company, that would be easier.
It's so true, Ida, and I find it fascinating that you've got such a logical brain. You've also gone into that problem solving of what's the language that we can use that will A, bring together the community within which I am working, but also make life easier and make the sell on easier for our investors as well.
And I want to say this without a sense of like, why can't they just say menstrual health? It's a cultural process, right? We expand cultures like this expansion, and then there's more and more room to do all the things in female health that needs to be done. There is still so much in what I think of a little bit as sort of these shadow areas where we don't really look, we can't really see it in our culture. But we have to help everybody go through that expansion process. I think if you just point fingers and be like, they are wrong because they are being egged out, you can say that's fair, but it's just not going to move anything. So I think having a sort of more inclusive, like, come, let me help you attitude, I think that's what can actually move things forward.
Yeah, and also, look, it's much more pragmatic in terms of moving along the process of developing an app like Clue, because I think, you know, it's like anything else in life. You can kind of either accept the status quo, and if it doesn't work in your favor, you can be defeated by it, or you can choose to find a solution to that thing that's standing in your way and carry on evolving anyway. So that I'm not getting a sense from you that Femtech was this permanent solution. It was more in the space of, look, this will help build community and it will also make life easier for our investors, thereby allowing us all to continue this extraordinary and important work we're doing. So it feels like it was a very necessary thing.
Yes, I will also say, we have technology that is specific for education. We call it EdTech, or for financial service, we call it FinTech. And we have a very set of unique life experiences and need because of the biology we have. Of course, we should care about differences in men and women when we develop medicine, when we, like any area of care and health prevention. But we do have special needs because of the biology we have. It's a huge thing to go through a pregnancy. It's different from a body that doesn't go through it. So no matter how gender informed our world maybe one day will be, I hope so, I still think there is a need for a part of health that is specifically aimed at women's bodies. You know, we started in reproductive health, so that was maybe what I was mostly thinking about, even though the definition, it didn't say only reproductive health, but I think that's how many people understood it. And now it's expanding, which I think is perfect. So it now includes things like bone health, brain health, things where women's symptoms are very specific and different from those of men. So cardiovascular health, for instance, or mental health. And I think that's great. You could imagine that maybe down the line, somebody will come up with a term that says, oh, there is this subpart of femtech that does these things. I think as, you know, as we innovate and understand more as a culture and as a tech community, we will become more advanced in how we talk about things.
It's right. And, you know, you've left the term open for evolution. Absolutely, in the age of AI, where we start to look at, you know, these different learned biases around data, it's ever more important that we are having these conversations.
I agree 100%.
So speaking of data, do you think that there is enough being done outside of Clue to really advance the amount of an understanding of female data so that we can really be enhancing our understanding of female physiology and health conditions?
I think people who are sort of deep in clinical trials and recruitment for clinical trials, they'll be much better positioned to answer that. My sort of general answer would be, I'd be surprised because if that was the case, because I feel this gender-informed innovation is still very early. And even having the awareness to think that, oh, we should care about gender as we go about innovating, still seems to be not a given.
I guess it goes back to our original conversation that nobody had already thought of the idea of Clue was both your biggest opportunity and a frustration, right? And I guess we're in the same place with the conversations around data collection now. It's a great opportunity to improve where the world is at, to make sure that we are including more female and gender diverse data in clinical trials. You know, at the same time, it's incredibly frustrating that still the progress feels so slow.
Yes. I agree. And it's going backwards in some ways. I find it really encouraging that there are many women who are building for women in health, right? So many of the femtech founders are women, not only, and I really invite the men to get into the space too. We need all the men there too. But this is an area where women then actually do take action and they do form the technology they need and they do try to solve the problems that they have encountered themselves. We can be sad about many things, oh gosh, but let's celebrate the one kind of corner of technology where women really are stepping in, which is femtech. I mean, they are in all corners of technology, which is wonderful, but particularly so in femtech.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely the case. If you look down the next kind of 5 to 10 years in the femtech world, where do you see it going or where would you like to see it going?
So there are still many areas where we just don't have great solutions yet. I mean, honestly, I still think family planning is one of them. We could still see, you know, 100 new types of birth control reach the market at mass scale because women need different things at different times in their lives and in different cultural settings. So that's a big area. So there are many like actual like products that still doesn't exist on the planet. But I also think that with everything that we have and all the data that we are generating, I'd love that data to sort of come together to more, to actually be more helpful to people. Because right now I might have some data in my running app. Maybe I did a hormonal test somewhere. I got a scan at some doctor's office. I have some data at Clue. But how do we make all these data sets work together and then actually make a tangible difference in my life so that I can base my health decisions on my data? This still doesn't exist. I also would love to see predictive analytics. So again, using all this data to tell me, you know, what's my risk profile for different things or when am I going to go into menopause? I'd like to know. And I think maybe we start being at a point where we could actually build these models. I would also love to see even more of these sort of deep tech innovations around diagnostics. And they are coming. I saw a company where they can do breast cancer detection in urine. Oh, why don't I have my monthly urine test at home to see if I have a breast cancer growing? That would be great. Or what if I had my last 10 years worth of hormonal health and a sense of what might come the next 10 years? So the diagnostics, I think, is also really interesting, sort of looking into the body at a molecular level. And then lastly, how do you get great innovation to actually be a readily available, accessible product I can go buy? There are so many amazing things I see at the femtech conferences, you know, amazing innovation. And I'm just like, when will I be able to buy this? I might never be able to because I see, unfortunately, people who have the patents, they have the proof of concept, they have the market fit, and they can't raise the capital to make it a mass market product. So distribution, discovery, scaling. I'd love to see more of that in the next 5 years.
And those sound like a number of meaty challenges for you to get your teeth into, Idel. Do you know what comes next for you?
You know, when I step back as CEO, I sat down and start writing a book, and I have pretty much written a book, and then I wrote the proposal, So the proposal is now out with my agent in America, and I keep getting no's from publishers. And it's really interesting because they say, you don't have enough followers on Instagram and TikTok, which is true because I have like 5 on each of these platforms. Or we'd like to see something that has more throwing dirt. And I'm like, I don't think the world needs that. We need to build bridges.
I think we've got enough of dirt throwing, haven't we?
Or it's not American enough. I'm like, but these are global problems and global questions. And by the way, all my, like, I have a lot of things in America. So I'm getting these sort of, you know, where the editors say, you know, great book, but we don't think we can sell this. And what I'm sitting with right now is this sense of, but wait, I really think there's a lot of women who would like to hear the story, and maybe men too. And it feels like there's a little bit like an invisible need in the market to hear a founder tell her story. Because there are surprisingly few of these stories out there. I was a little bit surprised, maybe. I
wonder if Caroline Criado Perez had the same experience, you know, when she's pitching maybe. Invisible Women. You know, meanwhile, like a million copies later, she's now.
Yes.
But I think that for me, of all the people I've spoken to and come into contact with for this series, that emotional connection of the app that you created is so profound. You know, when I said to the listener group that I was talking to you, the journeys that people are going on because of Clue, I mean, it really is very, very literally the building blocks of life. You know, people are going through pregnancy and loss and being diagnosed with endometriosis and discovering that they're, you know, perimenopausal, all these things which are absolutely foundation shaking, and they all see you as the person, you know, who's responsible for them being able to experience that in a happier or healthier way. So for me to hear that feedback makes me personally really cross for you. I really hope that there's something you can do about that in terms of, you know, that they'll allow you to gather some testimonials and feedback to them or something, because that just is so ridiculous.
Well, thank you. It's so encouraging. It reminds me a lot of raising money, where I would often feel I sit with, like, you know, this sense of like, there are so many women behind me, you know, in my bag, right, who says, I need this. And then sit across a couple of people who's like, I'm not sure this is worth investing in. I've like kind of been torn apart a little bit, but I am, you know, I'm hopeful. And it has definitely made me think, you know, if publishers choose to go for authors who already have a really big social following, then where does that leave publishers? Because then, in a way, people come with their own sales channels. And so it did make me think, well, maybe I should just, you know, also try to be an influencer of some sort and do it myself. But I think it's a societal sort of interesting moment if the ones who get to publish books are the ones that also care a lot about social media. I think it's just one of these moments in life where you're like, okay, maybe I just need to be a little more creative here, a different path. I haven't given up though. My agent hasn't given up. So let's see what happens.
We will make this the beginning of your social media campaign.
Yeah. I mean, I do have a lot of respect for people who are very good on social media, and maybe I just need to like get into the game a bit. There's one thing that I want to say. It's important for me to say that it has been such a group effort to build Clue with my co-founders, one of them my ex-partner, Hans Raffauf, and the amazing team and the current team. And I know it sounds like cliche, but I think it's really important to keep saying, really, there are no founders without a team, and there's no team without the users. So in a way, it all comes back to people caring about what you're building. I mean, that's...
Yeah.
But
it always comes back to community, both inside and out, right? And I love that you've said that. I have to say, I would be equally as kind to the rest of your founders if I knew them. But really, it's just it's really been an extraordinary experience for me as well in researching and putting together this. You know, I think hopefully it will help you in your journey to move towards social media. When I say your name, people don't know, but when I say Clue, everybody knows. So that's really something. Hey, Ida, before we go, we ask each of our guests on Flip the Focus the same three questions. And the reason we do it is really the intention of the podcast is that we all walk away better informed on how to amplify women's voices in tech. So the first question we ask is, what advice would you give women looking to get into tech right now?
I would say if you see a possibility in the market, something you have experienced in your own life that you're like, hey, why hasn't anybody solved this well? Trust that what you see is true. Even if you meet people who sort of doubt that that has any value. I think, especially as women, we have life experiences that are not very well recognized by sort of the general world. Like the world has put millions, billions of dollars into food delivery and ride sharing and all kinds of things that are like, yeah, those are important, but they're maybe not on my top 100, you know? Yeah, it's like... And who gets to decide what we put on top of that list of what's important? I don't think that's a very democratic process. So what you think is important could very well actually be very important.
I love that. And I think that's spectacular advice. You know, trust your own instincts. And if you have the data to back it, you know, absolutely go for it. So there's the second question, Ida. If you had a magic wand, and you could either vanquish or validate any aspect of the current tech landscape for women, what would you choose and why would you choose it?
If I had a magic wand, I could swing over the tech community, not just for women, but actually for everybody. I would say, let's look again at what we call success. We like celebrating unicorns, which is companies that has a valuation over $1 billion. I feel we live on a planet where we can't say that if we make a lot of money, we are successful. We have to do more than that. And also when we say we make a lot of money, we should instantly ask for whom, you know, are we making rich people richer? If we say growth, are we actually saying greed? So for me, I would love to widen our understanding of what success is. That would be my magic wand move.
I love that. That would make life immediately better for so many people. I think that's one of the extraordinary things about tech, that, you know, women can invent things using tech and allow that to help them give back to their local community and to society and really consider things that aren't just financial.
Maybe that. Can I share one more thing I'm thinking about? Because, you know, when you start a company, you are hyper-focused on the one company. And then as I stepped back from Clue, I started thinking more about the industry of femtech. And I feel I keep zooming out. And I'm actually really curious about what role female health has in being part of creating a more sustainable planet. So I'd love to start a think tank where the question is basically, how does female health, economy, and planetary sustainability, how do they link? Because there is a lot of data showing that when you invest into female health, you really invest into societies, and it's great for economy, it's great for well-being, it's great for work participation, it's great for so many things. And of course, if you have a more diverse participation in life, in work, in the world, I believe you're going to have a more sustainable planet. So for me, these connections are kind of pretty obvious, but I don't think there has been a lot of work put into articulating the argument. So my dream would be to get some very smart people together who are experts in many different fields and help try and articulate why female health is an important part of planetary health.
You go. That sounds a lot like when you had your idea for Clue and you realized you were onto something really huge. I think that is a think tank that could benefit so many people. And, you know, the data is also true, as you well know, you know, for when female founders are well funded, they put the money back into society and into the community and into hiring other diverse people as well. So I love that broader application of that theory. So then our final question that we ask every guest on Flip the Focus is, what are three actionable things that each of us could and should do to help amplify female voices? So it can be as simple as, look, here's somebody you should really follow on LinkedIn. And obviously everybody should help follow you so that you can get your book published. So we might make that our first action. Everybody listening, please immediately go find Ida on LinkedIn and all other social platforms. What are your other two?
I'll take all the help I can get. Yeah. Thank you. Sometimes in conversations, you know, if there's like a panel or a group, because conversation, men are so good at saying, yeah, what John said, I really agree with. And, you know, they lift each other. I wish women would do that more. You know, just say, yeah, I agree with what you said, or I've also been thinking about that, or, you know.
So legitimizing each other to help raise each other up.
Yes, yes. And it's not just because you want to raise another woman. It's also because often many people have come to me and said, oh, I'm so glad you said that. I was thinking that too. And I'm like, well, you know what? Then you need to say that, you know?
Yeah.
You need to say that publicly. Because men, they really do give each other a leg up all the time, on big scale and small scale. And I think that's a beautiful thing to do, actually. I just wish that they did it more to women and the women did it more to women. Because women do it to men, I've noticed. But somehow it's harder to. So a little more like, if you see something you like that a woman said or did, just make it public somehow.
I love that. Do you think that maybe from a societal conditioning perspective, that could be to do with the scarcity mindset? You know, like there's only room for one smart woman in the room, one funny woman in the room, one woman at the top of the pile.
I think it's because you put yourself at risk every time you voice an opinion.
Mm.
So if you say, I agree with that, you have made yourself open to criticism or ridicule or something else. It's scary, I think. Maybe there's also some of what you said. I don't know that theory so well. I think we need to be courageous. I think sometimes women need to be courageous more than what's comfortable.
Oh, I love that. And I love your way of phrasing it as well. Thank you so much for answering those questions, Ida, as part of the Flip the Focus podcast. It's been so fantastic to talk to you today. Mm. And as we've said during the podcast today, it's not an exaggeration to say that Clue has changed so many of the lives of the women that I know and my life too. And I'm so delighted that you made time to spend with us today. Thank you so much.
It's been my pleasure, really. Thank you so much.